Well, welcome to this latest episode of the Forever Bristol City podcast. Joy and rapture, the final score at the Riverside in front of the watching Nigel Pearson. It finished Borough 1, City 3, a repeat of the scoreline from last season's corresponding fixture, which everybody said was the way we wanted to and hoped to play under Dean Holden. Well, he was nowhere around tonight. The new manager was in the stand. Joining me this evening are the usual suspects, Dave, Les, Ian and Mark will be along later. We're going to let a couple of the other people in to do some talking as well. Taze is in with us. Let me come to you first, Dave. I mean, that was the reaction that maybe should have happened on Saturday. What do you think brought it about tonight? You know, five words of wisdom in a hotel from the new man?
I'm pretty sure he's had quite a big influence since yesterday's announcement. How much involvement had in picking the team, I think he might have had quite a bit, because I think, you know, bar Riley Taylor, who's still playing out of position at left wing back, everyone was playing in sensible positions tonight. You know, round pegs in round holes, square pegs in square holes, if whatever the expression is. And I think it showed as well. I think there were a couple of key things in it, which we'll probably talk about a little bit later on. But no, absolutely delighted. And I think is a huge boost to our season as well.
Yeah. Les, I mean, what did you think? There was a reaction there. Were you, any surprises in the lineup for you? At least Carr showed some responsibility and went on the left of a three, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, there was no real surprises apart from maybe Taylor coming in. But that makes sense with Sessegnon, you know, coming back from long-term injury. And I think we need to give credit to Simpson and Downing, because, you know, you looked at the way we passed and moved today and we didn't give the ball away at all. There was real clarity in terms of organisation. There was a real work rate, which probably comes from Pearson. But I thought, you know, the step up and the improvement from Saturday was absolutely huge. And I think the two assistant coaches need to take some credit for that, because we looked very, very well drilled today.
Yeah. Taze, you've joined us for the first time in a while, so good to have you on. Did you see the interview with Simpson before the game? It was very frank and open. And, you know, do you think he you know, they should take that credit for a sparkling opening 45 minutes?
Evening all. Yeah, I'd agree. I think both of them have to take a certain amount of credit for tonight, purely because we were on the front foot from the off. Drastic change from the weekend. And I just think that, to me, the players looked hungry and really what we want to see. So they've obviously played a part in it. So I would say, certainly off the back of Saturday, they deserve a fair amount of credit off the back of that. And much needed 3 points. So absolutely buzzing.
Yeah, I don't think we can be looking over our shoulders now. And I think even the most optimistic person, which probably isn't any of us, we don't really need to be looking too far up. I mean, Dave, let's come back to you on the starting lineup. That midfield combo of Nash, Palmer and Backinson. I mean, that was, you know, it looked... You know, people were saying, why haven't we done this before? So that is a question. Why haven't we done this before? Because, again, certainly for a good hour, they move well, didn't they?
It did. I think, you know, listening to Simpson before the game, I think most of us probably saw it as it was either going to be a very flat three in there, or it was probably going to be Backinson and Nash with Palmer in the hole. But it wasn't like that at all, actually. And Simpson said before the game, he saw it very much as two behind the strikers. So, you know, almost going back to how we started the season. But I guess Palmer and Nash played from probably slightly deeper positions than what Patterson and Vyman did early on in the season. But I thought, you know, Nash's first 45 minutes, I thought he was excellent today. And Backinson's tempo of his passing, his weight of his passing, it's really impressive, you know. And he'll have his bad games. And I thought, you know, Palmer, I think he gets a lot of unfair stick for not working hard. I always think he works hard. I just don't think he's very good at it in the main. But today he was pretty disciplined. And I think when he sat in front of Taylor after about 20 minutes, that was quite good. And it allowed Nash probably to swap over with him and cover Hunt a little bit more, because Bowler was causing some problems down there. So a couple of little tactical switches in the middle of the first half as well helped us, I think. And, you know, we took our goals really well. So that was good. Like the midfield.
Long way to continue. Yeah, Les, Pham's had his critics and saying shouldn't even start him. But the key thing up front was that he played Pham and Wells in the middle without pushing Naki out wide. I mean, well, it speaks for itself, doesn't it? I mean, Pham scored two, making it 50 goals for Bristol City, set up Naki. They looked a pretty useful combination this evening, didn't they?
No, I thought they did. I mean, I thought the first 10 minutes, I thought Pham was absolutely dreadful, and I thought it was going to be another one of his...
He did. He gave it away a few times.
I mean, his touch. Yes. He gave the ball away in poor positions. But then suddenly we got this break. I think Jack Hunt got the cross and it got blocked. And then Nadj did a beautiful chip ball. And I don't know what happened to Middlesbrough's defence. They had a really, really poor 15-minute spell. But the thing is that we were clinical, you know. We got these three chances and we took them all. And I think both Pham... And I thought Naki Wells was excellent today. I thought he worked his socks off. I thought he looked a real threat in good positions. And I think they both deserve a lot of credit. And I'm hoping Pham isn't, you know, out, because he seemed to go off quite quickly after going down. But no, I thought they were both absolutely excellent.
Looked like it was the plan for him to come off, Les, I think, as well.
Okay.
Semenya, right. But he looked like he had just hastened it, yeah.
Yeah, he had a big ice pack on his leg, didn't he? So, hope he is fit for the weekend. I mean, Taze, Riley Towler, he came in, and good to see him being brought back into the side, because it would have been easy maybe to have left him out and had him on the bench. But he showed a few nice touches, even though he was playing out of position, wasn't he?
Yeah, but looking at him tonight, you wouldn't have thought he was playing out of position. I thought the most pleasing thing for me tonight with Towler is obviously had a few tough games of late. Certainly of Watford springs to mind, but I think tonight would have been a real good confidence booster for him. He was steady. You could see a lot of his decision making was quite good, albeit cautious. But I was really impressed with him tonight, and I think it bodes well going forward, especially if he can sort of be in and around the first team playing more games, even if it's out of position. I think he would have built a lot of his confidence up tonight. So really good to see him having a steady game.
Yeah, no, that was good. Let's break into the action. And City's first chance came on 12 minutes. Dave Palmer, who looked a half-decent player tonight, set up Pham. And that was a smart save that Bettinelli had to do, dive into his left, wasn't it? Yes?
Yeah, it was good. I think, you know, the whole kind of quick, you know, one or two touch passing that got us there as well was good as well. And it's just good to see players actually linking. It was good, you know.
And the first goal, Dave, on the 20-minute mark. What a lovely little dink ball that was in by Nadj or Norg, or whatever he was being called on the red button. And a lovely little cushion header by Dijou, wasn't it, for his ninth of the season?
Yeah, it was. I think a few minutes before, we'd had a really good spell where we'd kind of worked the ball from side to side and got it forward into their final third. And you thought, oh, we're playing a bit better here. We seem to gain confidence from that. And I think Les had already said that Hunt got down the right-hand side, got a cross in, it got half cleared. Hunt won the header back against the kind of standing defender, and it fell to Nadj. And to be fair, he kind of got it out of his feet and dug out a good cross. And, you know, I guess a centre-forward like Zizou should, you know, should bury those, really. And he probably did. Yeah, it was a good goal. I think, you know, give us a real big boost.
Yeah, Les, two goals then in the space of 3 minutes. And again, they were good strikes. Backinson, I think, won the ball in midfield, fed it through for Naki, who unselfishly knocked it for Dijou. And then the other one that Wells set up, it was a Dijou header from inside his own half. Wells got the better of Housen. How did you see both those two goals, which really put City out of sight and won the game before the break, really?
Well, I think the second goal was outstanding, because Nadj has lost the ball in just inside their half, and he's run back to win it. He's got a strong challenge in. Backinson, he's played a nice, I think, first time through ball to Wells. And I was worried we're going to have another Sheffield United moment there, but he played a nice through ball to Zizou, got out of his feet nicely, tucked it away. Really good goal. And again, the third one, I can't remember if it was a long ball from our own half, but I thought Wells took a touch that was too heavy. And I was thinking, that's a chance gone. I'm thinking the keeper's going to rush out, and the keeper hasn't, and he's just moved it onto his left hand side, opened the angle up. I don't know if he actually took it round him, but there was enough space just to slot it under him or to the side of him. And at that point, I mean, I think everyone's in a bit of shock, to be honest.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was like that. It was really, really, really unbelievable at half time to go in, as you say, 3-0. I mean, Taze, looking at the three goals, which of them was the pick of the goals from your perspective?
I think probably the second, with Pham's a great finish. I think, as Les said, Naj worked his socks off to win the ball back, and it was just good to get that cushion. I think we needed it, even though on the basis of the first half, we definitely deserved it. But with our luck at the moment, I think we were always going to need the second goal. So for me, well, certainly for how I felt watching the game, the second goal definitely gave a bit more reassurance and could actually start watching and enjoying us again. So
and Pham put in a performance that I say wasn't great in the second half, as somebody's put on here. I'm not going to disagree with him from that respect. But Pham, he's in the exalted company now of goal scorers who've got 50 goals for Bristol City. You've got to give him some credit for that, haven't you?
Yeah, I think Fevs has obviously, he'll admit he's been a little critical of Pham at times. And Les obviously said first 10 minutes, I'd agree with Les. I thought, looking at Pham, I thought, oh, it's going to be one of those nights for him. But after that first goal, he sort of got his game way into the game slowly, and then playing to a level that we really expect him to do more consistently. But it's good to have him back on the score sheet. And I think he feeds off the confidence of scoring goals. So it's what we want. And it'll be interesting to see how he plays for the rest of the season under Pearson, and how they're accommodated, whether we go again with Wells two up top, or whether, I think Pearson has tended to favour 4-2-3-1. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, we've got a view. When we talk about Nigel Pearson's preferred lineup, we've actually had a contribution from somebody up at Watford, which we'll read out. Mark and Ian have joined us. We've done with the first half, chaps, but obviously we're going to spend most of this evening talking about the appointment of the new manager. No, manager, not head coach. Dave, I mean, second half, it was a little bit after the Lord Mayor's show, and I said to you before we went live, it was a little bit like the sort of wins that City had that storming start to the season with, where they got the goals, but we didn't impress in the second half. We did just enough. And you said probably they deserve maybe to sit back on that lead, but just expand on that point.
Yeah, I think it's kind of natural. Warnock's going to have given them a good old speaking to at halftime. They're going to come out a bit fired up. And I guess you sometimes, how you start that second half probably, you know, can influence how the rest of the game goes. We gave a couple of sloppy passes, and that just kind of dragged us a bit deeper than perhaps we wanted to. But we defended pretty well in the main. And as I said before the game, before we went on air, that when you're 3-0 up at half time, you don't need to be taking chances. I don't think we wanted to sit back as much as we did. You know, not going to argue with that. But it sometimes happens. They didn't create too many clear-cut chances. And I think we were all hoping we'd get, you know, a good pass through the thirds in the midfield, and we'd be 4-on-3 against them. We take the chances, 4-0 or 4-1, and you know, game over.
And they didn't come.
It didn't quite happen. And you know, you win that game in the first half, you know, and there was no need to go and do anything stupid in the second half. I think we defended properly, a little bit deep, a little bit narrow. We let them get into the wide positions too easily. But in fairness, Hunt and Towler didn't really let anyone get past them in that half an hour, first half hour of the second half. And then we made a couple of subs and
yeah,
got a little bit disjointed again. But that was
It was a bit. Ian, second half, bit of an after the Lord Mayor's show for you. Did you expect us to build on the 3-0 half-time advantage?
No. I thought it was a fantastic first game for Nigel Pearson to watch live. I thought it was everything you'd want in a first game. So the first half, we showed him what we could do, where we had six shots and all on target. And the second half, we showed him why we are where we are and looking over our shoulder, because we conceded too much ground, kept giving the ball away, and conceded a huge amount of crosses into the box. I thought we were really quite poor second half, and I thought we were quite good. Not perfect. I mean, after about 10 minutes, I think Pham had given away about three fouls, trampolined it three or four times, and all of a sudden He turned into Thierry Henry. It's the best I've seen the two play together. The reason they played well together is they were 10 yards apart, not 40 yards apart.
Yeah.
And they were towards the same area of the pitch up front. That's why they played well together. But I think what Nigel Pearson would have seen, he said, right, okay, first half, fantastic. Well done. Excellent. We could have done this a little bit better than that. Second half, that's why you are where you are.
Yeah.
Because you stop doing all the good stuff. I'm okay, the other side's got to get some credit. And Warnock, probably, there was probably paint coming off the walls in the dressing room at half time. But you've got to keep going, because the better sides would have come back, even from 3-0 up. The only downside for me tonight, really, was Pham going off with an injury.
Yeah,
and
no, he's
next to Callas, he's the guy that we can least afford to lose.
Yeah, yeah. You mean from the point of view of defensive strength as much as anything else, yeah? Because he did a couple of good clearances in that second half. And let me bring Mark in for the first time tonight. Mark, second half was a little bit after the Lord Mayor's show, but they'd done the business in the first, hadn't they?
Yeah, I mean, Backinson was already effective in the second half, and that was the difference. But we just kept giving the ball away. When we did get the ball in their half and we had the chance to get the ball wide and support the man on the ball, we just didn't do it. And, you know, heavy touches, took the ball through to Bettinelli, and they were back on the attack. I mean, I think although they had a lot of crosses into the box, they never really got behind us. And I think that's to the you've got to give credit to Riley Towder and Jack Hunt for that. And the wind was ferocious. The ball, you know, perhaps
they crossed it.
Even the goal that they got owed a bit of luck, because I think it was a ricochet off of Hunt, and then Johnson plays it with his left foot rather than his right, and then it takes two touches off our defenders before Fry sticks it in at the far post.
Yeah,
but
no,
yeah,
it was a scrappy goal.
My point is if you keep letting people cross the ball in the box, sooner or later, the worst footballer in the world will put in a decent cross and score a goal. So stop crosses.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
I agree
that. We keep doing it. We keep letting people cross the damn ball. Get close and stop them crossing it. Give a throw in away. Yeah. Do what you like, but get hold of the thing.
Yeah.
Well, we were a lot tighter in the first half, and we were great going forward, because attack and defence was in tandem, and with those three centre backs spread wide, we were able to thread the ball through to Wells and Zizou, and they connected very well with Casey Palmer behind. I thought they were great, but we just seemed to completely lose that in the second half, and I think Backinson, I think he just didn't make that impression in the second half. He really needs to do more.
As we say, the
but
job
it's not a bad start.
Done.
It's a good start.
It's a great start to the era.
But it's going to be a different game on Saturday, because they won't be one dimensional like
that. Very good team coming up. Although Swansea did lose at Huddersfield 4-1 at the weekend. Dave, Tomo's put on there about it wasn't a typical Neil Warnock side. We won 75% of the tackles we went for, and they won 40%. They were a bit ordinary, Borough, wasn't it? You know, I mean, they never really got going. Maybe if they'd have got that consolation goal 10 minutes earlier, we might have come under a bit more pressure. But they didn't look that great, Borough, did they, Dave?
No, but I think I've watched Borough quite a few times this season, and this Borough side isn't anything like a normal Warnock side. They actually, I know they get lots of crossing, but they actually do play. They got a ball playing midfield who's playing centre back in McNair. They got Bowler who absolutely bombed down the left hand side. And who do they have on the right hand side tonight? Just trying to quickly remember.
Fisher,
I was very disappointed because I had some money on him at 33-1 to get sent off to kind of justify the two sending offs that he should have had against us for Preston earlier this season. I think they're a different side. You know, they play a lot more football than people give them credit for, just because Neil Warnock's manager, and you know, they're not a great side, but they're an organised side. And you know, people like Morsi and Howson in the middle of the park there are good, solid championship midfielders who, you know, get about you. And for once, we actually stood up to that kind of physical challenge, which we haven't done for months and months. So, Yeah, that's good.
No, that's true. That's true. No, we have put a foot in a little bit more. Les, I mean, it was, you know, as we've said a few times, it was all over in the first half from being a contest. I mean, if we look at, I don't want to go through each individual player's marks, but I'll come to each of you, starting first with you, Les. Anybody an 8 or a 9 in your view? Anybody an 8 or a 9?
I thought Nadj was easily a 9. I thought for 80 minutes, he was absolutely outstanding. I think his legs went in the last 10 minutes or so, but he was the only one who got across to stop the crosses from the midfield in that second half. He was battling. I thought he was absolutely one of the best performances I think he's had for Bristol City, actually. Other than that, I think the two centre-backs, Viner, Mariappa, and then Callas as well, were all 8s and 9s. I think... You know, if you go back to 10, 15 minutes ago in his podcast, I think people were quite negative. We just won the game 3-1 and we've been very solid throughout the game. I think the whole team were 8s and 9s, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, Taze, any 8s and 9s or any 9? Just put it like that. Let's say nobody was less than a 7 or an 8. Any 9 out of 10 performances for you there, Taze?
I'd have to agree with what Les has said there, really, in terms of Nadj's energy levels were absolutely superb tonight. He was fantastic. I'd have him as a 9 personally, and I would actually probably give Mariappa a 9 tonight. I thought he was absolutely superb. And Callas did well on the left of a back three. So overall, I think a really, really good team performance, but they would be my standouts personally.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, that's done a fair spread of the numbers. I mean, Ian, if I come to you next on the performances, Hunt's been getting a few pelters on the here and being seen as the weak link. I mean, do you think that our new man, and we'll talk about his appointment in a minute, but Ian, do you think our new man would make many changes to that side for the next game, which is over at the Liberty Stadium in Swansea?
Well, he can't. There isn't any players available. We only got 19. There was only 8 on the bench tonight because we've only got 19 fit players. And if Pham's got a knock, let's say he's got a knock that keeps him out just on Saturday, then you're going to have 7 on the bench because there's nobody else available. Unless, you know, Baker rises like Lazarus from his deathbed, or Liam Walsh goes on the bench and he can play, you know, 20 minutes or something like that. We just haven't got the players to make any changes. And that's one of the things I think Pearson might find a bit awkward until players start filtering back. Tonight, I think you'd have to mark it as two completely separate games. You'd have to mark the first half. And yeah, there were some 8s there. Second half... We had to defend well because we kept giving the damn ball away. So I would, you know, there's players that I'd give an 8 in the first half that I'd give a 6 or a 5 in the second.
And that's fair. I agree with that. That's what you said at the beginning.
What we've got to maintain. And the thing I don't like is when he put Hunt in the left back. He's having a bit of a rough time at right back, but left back, oh, dear me.
Yeah.
I didn't see the sense in that because it wasn't like Taylor was getting a chase in. The kid was doing well. Leave him on.
Yeah,
take Hunt off and put Sessegnon right back.
Yeah, you could have left him.
I didn't get that at all. But Dave, I don't want to sound miserable, but I just don't want to get carried away.
You do. Tomo said, "Stop yawning, Febs." Is that because you're tired or you're listening to Ian?
That was me commenting about Mark being boring with all his negative comments. Not you, Mark Greenan, but Mark Carter.
All right, somebody else on there. Yeah, I mean,
cool. there, Mark.
The substitutions. Would you? Masengo came on in the end. Well, not that long after. But the substitution. Somebody's put on here that they altered the shape of the side a little bit. Masengo, would you have brought him on rather than Pato at the time that he came on, or not?
I think you know. First of all, let's go back. Borough changed it at half time. Instead of, you know, going with their 5-3-2, they swapped to a 4-3-3, albeit a massively lopsided one where they didn't really play with a left back, which was probably quite apt playing against Bristol City because, you know, we haven't had one for weeks. But Bowler played like a left winger in effect, and then they moved Dyke Steele out onto right back and took Fisher off, didn't they? And they played it, brought Mendes Lang on, and tried to play a slightly different way against us. And I think that probably affected us a little bit, and we probably didn't quite get it sorted out. But in terms of our subs, I think you just have to be mindful. You know, I don't disagree in around Towler, but sometimes you can just play them too much. And actually, if it means he's available on Saturday because he's not had to do a full 90 tonight, then that might have been the right thing. So we'll see how he reacts to, you know, rest up tomorrow and then come in, because he definitely didn't look as sprightly in the second game. When was it? Watford game, was it, when he started, having played against Sheffield United in the cup. So, and I think that's, you just have to be mindful about, you know, nursing these young players through at the moment. In an ideal world, you probably want Sessegnon, Hunt and Towler to kind of split the minutes across each fullback position over the couple weeks, but that's probably a luxury you're not going to get. Subs were, you know, whatever they were, really. You know, we I think Patterson played kind of up top for the last 10 minutes as well, which is probably another option for us if you know, we want to play more of a midfielder up there, or number 10 up there, and play him slightly withdrawn. So, yeah, you know, it's just a case, just, I guess, freshening up a few players in the last 10 minutes, quarter of an hour, so that didn't really too much into it.
Mark, the under-23s played today, and I think the invisible Liam Walsh wasn't invisible. He played for 60 minutes. They lost 3-1. I think Tomlin scored for Cardiff. But, you know, Lansbury looks like...
Under-23 stones,
under-23, yeah. yeah, that's very true. But, you know, Walsh... Would they put him on the bench and just to make up the numbers? And Lansbury looks like he's going to be out for an extended period. How many times have we heard that?
Swollen Achilles, I believe, isn't it? I wouldn't risk. I mean, I put him on the bench and leave him there with Walsh, but I wouldn't get him ready. I think he needs a couple of run outs. He needs to be wrapped in cotton wool, because we don't want to set him right back again. We haven't seen him all season, but you know, I was. When Les was talking about Nash, I mean, he made earlier about how well he played. He made one great overhead kick in his own area to clear the ball.
Yeah.
It was absolutely fantastic, as well as chasing back. And tonight, Casey Palmer, tackling back, clean tackles.
Yeah.
He's done that all his time, Mark, but people don't notice it.
Yeah. He was tracking back, and that's what really made a difference. Both of those tucking back and covering all of those gaps. I mean, I was interested to see this bowler, their left back. I mean, he's had quite an interesting career. He left Arsenal, got released by Arsenal a few years ago, and went to Middlesbrough Bar Blackpool. But he was actually on loan to Rovers a few years ago.
Is that right?
He was on loan to Rovers NBA, four seasons
is it?
Ago.
And he goes on the team sheet as Ebola. No, sorry.
Embola.
Anyway, look, I think we've done the game. Right, now, on the weekend, I don't think any of us expected, when we wrapped up the podcast on Saturday night, to be, well, we thought we were going to be in for another long haul looking for the right human. And lo and behold, it all started breaking. It's Nigel Pearson. It took them their time to announce it. I think it was pretty much in the bag from late Sunday evening. It got announced about 8:30 last night. I said on the podcast, actually, that what we should do, things were so dire, that we should go out like a business would do and get an interim in, and a quality interim where you over-recruit. And Nigel Pearson is the only manager in the time I've been watching City, when they've made changes, that I think, to a man, Pearson, I don't hear any voices of discontent with Pearson's appointment. So I'll come to each of you. I'll start with Taze. I mean, Taze, that is a bold appointment, Nigel Pearson coming in, but it's just for the 14 games as it is now. So, your thoughts, I'll come to each of you with your thoughts on Pearson's appointment, then we'll get into some of the detail surrounding it. But Taze, was it a surprise when he was announced?
It was, yeah. Absolutely delighted with the appointment, if I'm being honest. I think he's exactly what we need. Hopefully he can stay on, obviously, beyond this season. That would be the ideal. But yeah, very, very surprised, but delighted all the same. I honestly think, as you said, Dave, that I can't remember a time as a City fan where the fan base have been so unanimous in agreeing really with the fact that he's the right man for it. So very pleasantly surprised, but I'm just looking forward to seeing what he can do going forward now, really, and how he's going to set us up. how we're going to play. Also, he's a bit of a character as well, so yeah. I'm sure that'll add a bit of spice to it. So, really, really good appointment for me.
Yeah, Dave, I might have said to you off air earlier today that he's the first what I would call proper manager we've had since Danny Wilson. Now, I don't include Steve Coppell there because he was of a par, but he wasn't here long enough to have any impact. But I know we spoke privately, but you felt it was a bold appointment, bring him in, wasn't it? And do you think it was Steve Lansdowne's appointment this time?
Your last bit of the question, absolutely. I'm not sure about a bold appointment. I think, you know, I know Ian's been mentioning him and Mark's been mentioning him in their list of people we should get in. From my point of view, one that, you know, he's not an absolute quality manager. I didn't think we'd go for someone like that, and nor did I think he might go for someone like us either. So I think that's why, you know, I've not really mentioned him, and I've been quite keen on Paul Cook. But, you know, as soon as you hear that actually we might be going for him, then, yeah, you know, as Taser said, you know, absolutely right behind it. He's a level above, and probably two levels above where I thought we might recruit. And
yeah.
So, and you know, you're the recruitment specialist, you know, gone out there, we've gone big, haven't we? And
yeah. Well, we have gone big. No doubt about that.
Listening to Simon Jordan on TalkSport today as well, in terms of him saying that, you know, he's a good manager and he expects that, you know, if Pearson is still here next season, he expects us to be right up there as well. I think he's that good a manager. All comes down to what the players do for him, obviously. But
Les, are you concerned that it's temporary? You know, because one would like to think temp to perm, but if he does a good job for us, I think he's mellowed a bit. That interview he did with Sky after he'd had he lost his mum last year, he got COVID, then he had heart disease related to it, sounds like an arrhythmia, then rheumatoid arthritis. He's been through it a little bit, but do you think that we should be concerned that he's using this to get us back, to get himself back wired up to be an intense manager? Or do you think he does view this as a project? And I'll ask the same question of Ian, but you first, Les.
I'm not convinced Nigel Pearson's the kind of manager who'll come in just to get his name mentioned again around the championship. I am concerned that it's a short-term deal. I mean, it makes sense for that to be the case because of the situation we're in. And I, you know, I've mentioned this to people. My worry is Pearson likes to be very, very hands-on. He likes to be involved in the physio side of things. He likes to be involved in the science, the transfers behind the scenes. How on earth is that going to work with someone like Mark Ashton, who is very keen to maintain power? And like you said at the start of this topic, this was a Lansdowne. this was a Lansdowne appointment. And my worry is, will Pearson want to stay and work with someone like Ashton, where he may not have the same, the same remit that he would like or expect or demand? That's my concern.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Ian? Concern that because look, let's say he wins 8 out of the last 14 games, you know, which would see us, put us on 24, 42, about the same number of points as we've had for the last few years. He finishes, they put the season tickets on sale, and then he goes, and then we end up with Michael Appleton. Yeah, are you concerned that this is just this short-term overhire interim appointment, or do you think he will be here for the long term?
Well, what I'd say is I can't say it's not a great appointment because I've been banging on about Eddie Howe in him for a while and dismissing people that are coming from the lower level because I don't want another League One, League Two manager. You know, there's a bloke at Bradford. I think he's 25 or 28 and he's doing well. I mean, let's go and get him. Let's for once go out and get a manager that draws attention to the club, raises the club's profile. And hopefully our owner that does like a flip-flop, he decides he's going to back him. Because it's no good bringing Nigel Pearson in and then saying in the summer, right, you know, we've got these 13 blokes we've got leaving. If none of them sign a new contract, we've got 13 going, senior pros. You say, right, got 13 senior pros. Nigel Ayers, £6 million. Rebuild your squad.
Yeah.
Because he'll go, no. And I think the fans need to know if he's going to be there before they do anything with season tickets. Because it'll make a big difference, because I'm not buying one until I know. And if it's somebody like, oh, well, Nigel's decided he's going to move on or whatever, and here's Michael Appleton, that's me finished. I'm not going to buy a season ticket. So, yeah. And there's thousands of people. If you only got to look at the forums and social media, there's thousands of people that do the same. So, you know, and if Ashton, I would imagine if Ashton's got the kind of power that people think that he's got, then Pearson, and he didn't want Pearson, Pearson wouldn't be here. So I think Pearson's clever enough. You know, he's fallen out with people in the past, and he might have learned a bit of a lesson and thought, well, hang on, I just need to rein it in a little bit sometimes and, you know, work together for the greater good. And I hope the bloke does great. And I hope he stays.
I hope he stays as well.
It's a hope. Not an absolute expectation.
No, because, I mean, look, if Steve Bruce got canned by Newcastle, yeah, I mean, he's the sort of
if your auntie had bollocks, she'd be your uncle. I mean, we might get Alex Ferguson might come out of retirement.
Well, he could have done you know? That. I mean, Mark, what are your thoughts on that? Are you disappointed, Mark, that there is a bit of disappointment because it's not we've given him a 2.5 year contract. He's here for 15 games. Yeah. What do you think?
I think it suits both sides because he gets to see what we're like, but it's the manager, which is interesting, who the fans would have picked, which is very interesting because Nigel Pearson challenges the hierarchy of clubs that he works at. He's a very imposing guy, a very intelligent guy from what I've heard, especially on a BBC Sounds programme called Don't Tell Me the Score, Valuing People, if you get a chance. It's a bit heavy going, but he tells you about, you know, what influenced him in life in terms of being positive. He's worked with sports psychologists at Leicester and Casper Schmeichel and Riyad Mahrez. Credit him, you know, building towards a team that won the Premier League. They can't speak highly enough of him.
No, well, that's it. And it's good to get a manager where people say he's going to do well for you, isn't it?
He will really build the players up. He's very hands-on. And if he can get the good players given 100% every week and get 120% out of the more ordinary players, City are very well set next season if he stays there, both to build and attract good quality signings because he will attract players.
That is a good point you say about attracting. Now, Mark, you got in touch with the Watford Supporters Trust to get a view on this, and Laura Lowe did you a very long email. I'm just going to read bits of it and then might drop in asking questions. And it was Nigel Pearson arrived with Watford in a dire situation. Bottom of the table, just 1 win and 9 points after 16 matches with performances to match. And it said the defence had gone to ratchet and the attack had gone missing as well. So Pearson had to both find goals and improve the defence. On the pitch, Pearson used his preferred 4-2-3-1 in attack and 4-4-2-4-5-1 in defence. Dave, coming to you first, what can we expect that you're very good at? Have you got? Is that pretty much in line with what you're expecting Pearson to do down here? 4-2-3-1, something like that. Possibly.
Yeah, I think he'll. I'm hoping he'll evaluate our squad and work out what the best system is for it, rather than necessarily go with one that doesn't fit. Although, having said that, there's quite a big discussion going on between four or five of us over the weekend around. This is before Pearson, around 4-2-3-1. And you know I'm not a big person for formations, is probably the most flexible system to go and recruit to. And probably enables you to have kind of versatility in there as well. So it doesn't surprise me that, you know, that might be something that he goes to with us, especially if, you know, he can't recruit as many players. You know, I'm talking like he's going to be here next season, but you know, he can't recruit loads of players in the summer. He's got to be selective, and if it's quality over quantity, then I think he'll go for a system like that where you can perhaps have, you know, players in midfield. So you take perhaps Naj tonight. Well, Naj can play in that two, but he could also play as one of the three as well, couldn't he, and be the one who's kind of breaking forward. And I think that's, you know, I liken it to what Preston do So Preston have got a whole host of players that can play one or more positions. So they'll have someone like Maguire who can play up front, but he can also play wide. Sinclair can do that. You get Daniel Johnson could play in the 10, but he could also play left side. And I think that might be how we go, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, Laura goes on to say in this, he understood how to take the pieces given to him and make them work better. Simultaneously, he changed the mood at the training ground and at Vicarage Road. Players who were supposedly eager for a British coach seemed to feel he offered the right mix of support and directness, happy to put his arm around a shoulder, but also prepared to deliver tough words. I mean, Taze, that's what you want in a manager, somebody that can be good cop, bad cop, in equal measure. Would you agree with that?
Definitely. I think that's one of the pluses with Pitt. Well, one of many pluses, really. I think he's got many strings to his bow in a sense that he can play good football. But I think, as I think Mark said, he will challenge the hierarchy. He will push. He will want to take the club on. But he also doesn't suffer fools gladly. So I don't think we'll end up having too many players that will be passengers throughout games. I think he does really bring a different dynamic to what we've had for some time, really. I mean, he's sort of a more experienced, successful and perhaps maybe aggressive version of Cottrell in that sense.
Yeah, no, that's a good comparison there. She's written here, just after he arrived, Watford went 4-2-1, but then performances slipped with a win of 1-1-4 from late Jan until lockdown, and they said that was obscured by the 3-0 win over then undefeated Liverpool. And I read this on the forum, Watford's forum as well. He was never the same. Watford were never the same after the COVID break or the enforced break. And Pearson's COVID case evidently left him with bad side effect for months, which we've read about that, or those of us that have followed it. The players returned from lockdown and never switched back on, and they lost that lively Delafeu. There was talk from the players of leading a night bulb moment, but it never came. That sits as much with the players, some of whom seemed to lose interest or were thinking about their next move. Les, there's talk, and this in the Watford dressing room before they humped us 6-0, there's quite a strong player contingent there. And that Troy Deeney, do you think he's the sort of player that, you know, in football clubs, you get a player that maybe exerts too much influence and has the players talking as a, well, likes to think he's talking for them as a collective? What do you think of that?
Yeah, possibly. I've heard a bit about Deeney and his attitude over the last few months, and it's hard to tell without being a part of it. The problem you've got with a team like Watford is you've got quite a few of these. Well, when they're in the Prem, they had a lot of these French African players who may have been one group. You had the Andre Gray's, Deeney, who may have been another group, and they maybe have just not a squad that wasn't very harmonious. Whereas in Bristol City, you're dealing with a very, very different type of footballer. You're not dealing with that same level of ego and that same level of quality at the end of the day. If you look at Pearson's career in England, it'd be interesting to see how this Bristol City squad compares to what he's had previously. I reckon it's probably one of the weakest that he would have ever have managed. What I'd be interested to know with Pearson isn't necessarily the Watford comparison, but it's a Derby one, because that's the one managerial job he had where big things were expected that went terribly. And I remember seeing Derby at Bristol City when Wilbraham scored in injury time. Or when at the end, and they were dreadful. I mean, they were really, really poor. And I think he only won one game in 12, 13. So it'd be interesting to know what went wrong there rather than necessarily the Watford comparison.
Oh, well, yeah, a friend of mine who's a Derby fan talked about that. And I think he fell out with Mel Morris, the chairman, but lost the dressing room. But this was from a Derby season ticket holder, that Richard Keogh was captain of Derby at the time, and they didn't like how he was dealing with them. So maybe sometimes when you need to kick ass, you know, more people need kick ass if they become the majority, then you have got a bit of a problem there. I mean, this Laura goes on to say, we'll never know exactly what led to Pearson's dismissal, despite lots of rumours after a dreadful match at West Ham. For a club with a model built on frequent changes to a head coach role that has relatively little influence over transfers, Pearson seemed was the right fit for a short-term turnaround, that's what we got here, but perhaps not the right fit for a long-term relationship with the Watford hierarchy. It's hard to know what his relationship was with the board because it was such a short period interrupted by COVID. This relationship thing with the hierarchy, I think, you know, we don't know how he was affected. Well, he said himself he was affected badly physically with COVID, with his medical side effects from it and everything. Mark, I mean, this has got to be crucial to the longevity of his tenure at Bristol City, hasn't it? You know, getting on with, well, we're talking about one individual he has to get on with, aren't we? Mark, you still there?
Yeah, sorry, I'm still here. Could you hear me now?
Mark, you still there?
Can you hear me now?
Yes,
yeah, sorry, I've unmuted. I mean, with Watford, you could say in defence of Pearson that they're used to changing managers when the going's good. I mean, Jokanović was sacked after he got him promoted, wasn't he? Which is a nice way to reward somebody. But yeah, I think he's very imposing, and he'll say what he thinks. He was famously sent off, I think, before a match by a referee who burst into the changing room and he admonished him. He got the ban turned over straight away. But he will say what he thinks. Cottrell said what he thinks, and I think there's got to be mutual respect, I think, for both parties. And I think both parties have agreed to this deal. But I think City's squad will have a lot to learn from. And I think Les is right. It's about, you know, probably one of the weakest bunch of players from a ability side, maybe mentally as well, that he's had to work with. And perhaps they can learn from him. Somebody posted, of course, he moved Chris Martin on to Fulham maybe when he was there. He would certainly have worked very briefly with Adrian Mariappa.
Yeah, but, so you know, he knows one or two of them.
But he
and
might.
And Vyman as well.
I think it's. And Vyman, but his criticism's going to be constructive.
Yeah.
He's worked with sports psychologists, I think a guy called Ken Way, Leicester University, who really rates him, and he worked with him when he was at Southampton as well. And Leicester is probably the only job where he's worked with a substantial period of time. Funny enough, he had two spells there because he went to Hull and then went back there after the Malaysians took over and then built them towards a championship winning team. So he's a winner. He's the man that the fans would have picked.
The final word from the Watford reporter or the supporters trust person. Many Watford fans respected Pearson, would welcome him back and wish him all the best at Bristol City. For a Bristol City side in a bad situation, he could be a good fit, figure out simple solutions, motivate players, change the attitude. He knows the Championship well, and given that Bristol City still have to play Borough, who we've beaten, Swansea, Bournemouth and Brentford, it can help them come to the top. I mean, Ian, when Koppel came, we all knew he was a personality manager that probably didn't spend that much time on the training ground. We're not for one moment saying that Pearson is like that at all. But he enjoyed most of his success with Craig Shakespeare as his number two. And then I think Chris Powell was with him for some of that time as well, maybe not a very long time at Derby. How important is it that we let him select his own backroom team? And that'll be the first time we've not had the chairman saying, you've got to keep old Keefe because he's a good boy. But do you think Simpson and or Downing will be around for much longer? Or do you think they will be here to the end of the season at the very least?
Yeah, they'll be here to the end of the season at the very least. The first thing he's got to do, I mean, bear in mind he wasn't in charge tonight. I know he gave him a pep talk in one thing and another, and good if he did. but no, let's see. What he needs to do is save us from relegation.
Yeah.
Because I've got absolutely no doubt that had he not come in, we would have been relegated. And
because well, even if Paul Cook had got the job because he was available, he could have started.
If we hadn't have made the change, I mean, we had to make the change.
Oh, make the change, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to look at the thinking, and that's the bit that I really don't get. If Steve Lansdowne's gone on TalkSport, then another Billy Big Shoes interview, you know, we needed to bring in the bloke, and then he described his qualities, and they are polar opposites of Dean Holden. Polar opposite. So if Dean Holden was the best guy available, best available coach in the world in the summer, why is Nigel Pearson suddenly the best guy when he's the polar opposite? Now, that's something I don't understand. And, like I say, our owner has got a terrible tendency to flip-flop about what he wants and what he's doing. And not wanting to change a structure that clearly hasn't worked properly for 4 years. There's been some good bits and some really bad bits, But it's, you couldn't say it's been an overall overwhelming success. We've sacked the last two managers.
And we've done it to death on here, my own view, he
takes us through to the end of the season. We see where we are. And then you make up your mind. You either say, he either says, I want all my own people in. And that would have probably been discussed when they spoke to him. I want all my own people in. He might get to the end of the season. And like you said earlier on, somebody might head on him. You know, there might be a premiership job going and they might say, let's make something up. Let's say Sean Dyche left Burnley. They might think, wow, well, he's the ideal guy for us. So the honest answer is we do not know. We haven't got a clue what's going to happen. But let him get us out the muck we're in, that is of our own doing and all these terrible injuries. Let's do that. And then we'll start thinking about next season, season tickets. Does he bring in his own assistant? I mean, if he does do well and then go, then at least you would hope that Steve Lansdowne will say, right, let's go and get another bloke like that.
Yeah. That'd be interesting to see whether he does that. Let's hope that he does stay. I mean, Les, the media, there's been very much a media blackout on all of this. There's been no spokesperson coming from the club. I know it's all being announced tomorrow. Tomorrow, when it is announced to the media, will it be Mark Ashton and Nige? Will it be either of the Lansdownes and no Mark Ashton? Ashton's been conspicuous by his total silence in the last 48 hours. Somebody put on the feed, I was watching it on the red button, so I didn't even realise there was no replays on red button. But somebody said he was getting chummy sat next to Ashton. I mean, the old saying goes, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. I mean, who do you think's going to present to the media tomorrow? And should we read anything? Well, if Ashton's not there, then he's toast, really, isn't he? Would you say?
Oh, I think it'll be Ashton. Yeah, he's the chief executive officer. He'll be the one doing the talking, I think.
It's the only one in the country, I suspect.
Yeah, I don't think it's, you know, that bigger issue as to who presents here. But no. I would say that this is very much a Lansdowne appointment. Yeah. And but you know, maybe we've been all this time giving Mark Ashton an unfairly hard time. Maybe he was the one who went to Lansdowne and said we need to change tack. And I know a lot of people said when Holden got the job, how awkward John Lansdowne looked during the interviews on the pitch. Watch it again and look how awkward Mark Ashton looks during the process as well. So maybe we've been giving him an unduly hard time, and it'll be interesting to see how it changes over the next...
What do you think? What do you think, Dave? I mean, you know, we've been harsh critics of him and his £500,000 salary. And we've said for two or three months it's running down of the contracts that's been going on. Yeah, the running down of the contracts. It's cleared the decks. You know, there's a lot that can happen. Do you think, you know, we've been discourteous to them and they have had this master plan where they've been working on it in this post-COVID football finances landscape? What do you think?
I think... You don't go through a vigorous 6-week process interviewing over 10 people, thoroughly interviewing four, and turned up with Dean Holden as the best candidate to do that process again in a much shorter period and turn up Nigel Pearson. So whoever had the influence in making that decision in the summer has been completely overruled this time. We don't know which one it is. I probably can guess what I think it is. And the tone of Steve Lansdowne interview on, was it Friday night, having done the one on Monday?
Told
me he wasn't very happy and he was changing tack. That's my view. I might be completely wrong, but that's how I read the situation.
Yeah. I mean, John is allegedly over in the other side of the Atlantic, but... Steve could come and appear at the presentation tomorrow. I mean, he didn't have to do the talk sport thing today, did he? Why didn't Ashton do the talk sport thing? I mean, what's your views now, Ian, on the relationship with between Ashton and the chairman. And indeed, there was rumours going around, a strong thread on OTIB at the weekend, that Ashton was the mysterious championship chief exec helping a bunch of Americans buy Ipswich Town. I mean, do you think Ashton will be there in 6 months' time?
I've no idea. I mean, I think whoever's there tomorrow, and as somebody else has said, if John's still in the Bahamas and Steve's in Guernsey, it's highly likely to be Ashton, isn't it? Yeah. And I'm guessing it'll be Ashton, the press officer, and Nigel Pearson. So we'll hear what he's got to say. I don't think it's going to be, you know, the usual guff. Let's put it that way. There's not going to be going on about POMOs and box entries and all that kind of stuff that we've grown to love over the last four or five seasons. It's going to be some straight talking. And like I said, that's what I was, in a way, although I was pulling my hair out in the second half, I was glad we played like we did tonight, because after the first half, Pearson must have been thinking, well, what's the problem?
Yeah.
What's wrong with this lot? If this is what we can do with all these players injured, Christ, we must have a good team. And then the second half, he must have thought, ah, yeah, right, I get it now. Yeah, okay. I don't know. I mean, I totally agree with what Dave said. You don't go through a rigorous process with global applications from all over the world, Ashton said. And then him in, you know, John Lansdowne particularly looked like he'd been kidnapped by the Taliban and was being forced to say that he was now a Muslim, and that all, you know, that he was going to go right, he was going to like blow himself up live on television to prove that, you know,
he looked like one of the Allah's hostage videos, did he? We shouldn't laugh about.
Yeah, it was, wouldn't it? I mean, poor old John. I mean, his eyes, you know, he's big, wide eyed. John, then you went for this. Why did you do that?
Do you remember Roy Kinnear when he used to do that? He did that character, didn't he, on the Dick Henry show, where his son, played by Dick Henry, would say, "Dad, I've got it wrong again."
Oh yeah.
Look, honestly, do we know what's going on down there, the ins and outs of the conversations? No, we don't. None of us do. Is Mark Ashton the mystery guy at Ipswich? Well, he might be.
I doubt it.
He might not be. And who's there tomorrow? Doesn't really. I mean, you know, if Steve's in Guernsey and John's over is it the Bahamas where he's sorting his house out?
Allegedly, yeah.
Bermuda.
Yeah. Bermuda.
So
yeah, you know where he lives. Yeah, so you found it.
Yeah. It's not in the Caribbean.
By all means, you know, Mark Ashton will do it, and he'll give all his usual suave, debonair. Nigel was always our first choice, which is a bit odd when you see, well, you know, we were aware of Eddie Howe, of course we spoke to him. Well, if Nigel's your first choice, what are you chatting to Eddie Howe for?
So it goes on
that this type of thing, you've got to look at, with a lot of these decisions, you've got to look at what informs your judgment. What's actually happening? Never mind what he's saying.
Yeah.
What's actually happening? You know, And then at the end of that, I mean, I felt like saying at the end of that interview when John Lansdowne was talking about Dean Holden, right, okay, where's John Lansdowne and what have you done to him? But, you know, that I suppose we could be completely wrong and it could all be exactly as it come out, but I just don't know how you do one process and come up with Dean Holden.
Well, I wish somebody's got the balls to ask that. Somebody's got the balls to ask that question.
No, I doubt it very much. That ain't going to be a thing.
Mark Ashton's a politician, isn't he?
What's that, Mark? Sorry?
Well, great.
Mark Ashton's a Gregory. Politician, and Steve alluded to that when he said we like him keeping our council on the EFL board, which just told you everything you wanted to know about what Mark Ashton is as an operator. I mean, if we want a politician, you know, we'll get a politician in.
That's why we were advocating having a more diplomatic person. We said this a couple of pods ago. You have a figureheady type person, like a what was his name? The Scudamore, who's local 3 days a week, very big figurehead because Steve wants to be abroad and stuff like that. And you bring in, I mean, look, is interestingly that Pearson, he had that guy, Steve Walsh, as his player recruitment guy who helped assemble that Leicester side or the basis of the side that won the division. And then I think Steve Walsh went to Everton and it didn't go quite so well up there. But this all gets back to the setup and what's going to happen. I mean, I think the big thing, guys, in the last sort of 10 days, it looks like come the start of next season, we're going to be back in at full stadiums. You think that's something, Taze, I come to you, Taze, because you've been sat there quietly in the background. Taze, do you think we will have full stadia come second week of August?
Well, you just don't know at the moment, do you? I'm hopeful. I think that'll certainly be pleasing if Pearson is in charge and we do go back. But I dread to think what it'd be like if we do get, to quote Ian, someone like an Appleton. I don't think there'll be as many that go back. But it will be interesting. Fingers crossed, because I think we've all had enough time away from it now. And what better better time to go back down there off the back of appointing someone like Pearson long term?
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Les, do you think if Pearson did get it and stay permanently, when they open the stadium, and let's assume they're full, you know, our home first match at home is the second week of the season, so we're talking probably about the 15th of August. Do you think that the stadium would be seeing a big crowd like there was there for the Fulham game, the last match, 20,000 plus, or do you think there's a hardcore of supporters of a certain age that won't go to these mass crowd events? What do you think? I mean, I'll be going, even though I'll be 65.
Well,
yeah.
Well, assuming that people can afford to go and they haven't lost their jobs and they've still got the finances to buy a season ticket, I think they'll fly off the shelves if Pearson is in charge, because he's the biggest name that we've had in years. And then you also put into the equation that we may have quite a large number of new players who people will want to see. They're going to be excited. New players, new manager. Potentially new backroom team, if you look at his assistants.
Yeah.
He will, I assume, want to bring his own men in. So, yeah, I think if he is in charge, I think they'll fly off the shelves if people can afford it.
Yeah, would you concur with that view as well, Dave, that, you know, Brave New World, if it all goes off? I mean, because if he gets us to finish now about eighth, which I think is probably the best we can hope for, about eighth, do you think that the euphoria of being able to go back into grounds will supersede, well, with all, as you said, new players, new manager, new everything, do you think that will supersede any concerns about COVID going on?
I think all that criteria you've just put in place then, I just put on the text there. I think it would be an opportunity for the club to, I'm not going to, you know, sell tickets at a stupid price, but almost kind of recognise that people are a bit skint and actually try go in a little bit cheaper than normal and try and sell more, because I think they need to recoup some income. And where they're going to make their money is on actually people, more people being in the ground and more people buying other stuff. There's almost like a fixed amount of money they're going to get from season tickets. So the more people they can get in, more people buying stuff in, you know, the merchandise stuff around the coffee shop and all that kind of stuff, is the way they're going to make the money. So I don't know. That would be
I mean, it's interesting you made that point about lower price season tickets. I've just done a quick calculation, and if they did an across the board £150 subsidy off your season ticket, whatever it costs, and there was 10,000 season ticket holders, all right, that's £1.5 million. Yeah, and that would be seen as a good gesture. And if you look at the amount of money that our owner has, that is like 1.5 million to him is probably like a couple of grand to us, isn't it, in terms of, you know, showing goodwill. Because I do think that Steve Lansdowne listened to the fans. Do you agree with that, Ian, that he sat up and took notice about how bad people were really beginning to feel? And maybe John, who's in touch with the fans, I would agree, say maybe he said, "Dad, we got to do something here. What do you think?"
In a Dick Emery voice, he said it.
I think when I look at it, and if I was Steve Lansdowne, let's try and look at it in a slightly different way if we can, from his point of view. Now, whether you call it wasted or invested or whatever, he's pumped an awful lot of money into this football club. And some people would look around and say, well, yeah, but hang on, that's his fault, because he's pumped it in, given it to the wrong people, or put it in the wrong areas, or whatever he's done. But yes, he's put about 175 million, I think, is into the club. What he's got to show for it so far is infrastructure and a kind of, if we're lucky, middling championship team. Which for spending that kind of dough, I mean, Burnley haven't spent that kind of money, Huddersfield haven't, Norwich haven't, and they've all been up. All right, they might have come back down. Yeah, we know that. Cardiff, the same. They haven't spent that kind of dough. And then, you know, they've been up, they've been down. All right. But at least they've done the go up, go down, the parachute thing. We haven't done that. And there's got to be a reason for it. So I don't know. I'd like to think that Steve is going to stay on and keep investing, because he said we've got headroom in the summer with financial fair play in his interview. So that is a big signal to anybody coming in that's going to take the job and say, well, look, you get any, well, I'll call them name managers, okay? And we'll leave Paul Cook out for the time being because he's never managed in the Premier League. So if you said you were sat there in front, you had Eddie Howe, Nigel Pearson, perhaps, you know, somebody else. And one of the things they're going to ask you in the conversation is, what money are you going to invest to get me to build this team? You know, we got 13 players leaving, because somebody said to me the other day, hang on, you're wrong, it's 11. It's not, because people forget Mariappa and Lansbury are only here to the end of the season.
Yeah.
So there's 13 players. Now, okay, some of them couldn't care less that they're going. You know, I'll drive them wherever they want to go. Others, Zizou, Walsh, you think, I'd rather hang on to them if that's all right.
Yeah. So yeah, you might do.
I want to see that commitment from Steve. Or let's say, for example, if all these rumours are true about consortiums and God knows what, I'd like some clarity on that. And I would think any manager, you know, you wouldn't want a manager to sign a 3-year contract and then all of a sudden, you know, Steve say, well, actually, I've had a guts full of this. And I'll tell you honestly, I wouldn't blame him if he said, look, I'm fed up with all this. I'm still going to build the block of flats in the basketball stadium, but the football club's got right on my nerves. And I've decided I'm going to flog it. If that was the case, because I don't get the letting all the contracts run down bit. I'd like Steve, to be honest, because whenever I've spoken to him, he's always given me very, very straight answers to straight questions.
Yeah.
And I'd like Steve to say, this is why we're letting these contracts run down. All right, don't worry, you're pretty little Eddie. We're letting these contracts run down. It is a strategy. It's not an accident.
No. I think it's because they're expecting that they can get better quality players that clubs in a less financially fortunate position than us will be able to afford. Yeah, there isn't going to be any money about Simon Jordan. Yeah. I was listening to him today. It's a big, you know, we got to stay in this division because it would be an absolute disaster for Lansdowne, and maybe the spectre of relegation to League One was starting to stare him in the face. Look, I think we've got everything to look forward to. We didn't have anything to look forward to when Holden came. We were lulled into a false sense of security with that 4-game winning start. I feel that we've got our Pat Lamb now, if he stays, to a man. All agree that we feel in the football club we've now got our Pat Lamb equivalent. Are we all agreed on that?
Yeah, I've got a roadmap for us, Dave.
You what, sorry?
Yeah, our roadmap. This is my ideal roadmap.
This is your ideal roadmap, is it?
This is my roadmap. Pearson gets us promoted to the Premier League next season, survives the following season, and then we bring in Ranieri.
Yeah, right. Yeah, in your dreams. Les and Tays agree with that. I mean, we've got our own Pat Lamb now, haven't we?
I agree.
You can back
it's on
up.
A par with that. Dave, agree with that as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, Dave agrees. There we go, guys. 1 hour 15. thanks a lot for your contribution, all of you. A bit full this evening in there. We had a total audience at one stage of 141. Online, as we speak now, 78, which is still a very healthy number. We've broken through the 16,000 downloads barrier. We actually publish all our numbers on the front of the website. This is episode 54. Our Twitter followers, still small in comparison to some, notably OSIB, but they've gone from 150 about 2 weeks ago up to about 280. So I couldn't do any of this without you guys contributing, and you know, it's really fun to do it. We do it for the crack. We're not four grumpy blokes or five grumpy blokes. We're Bristol City through and through, forever Bristol City.
Speak for yourself. I'm grumpy.
I'm 60. I'm 65. In I might not that's be his, doing it on the that's March. His, that's 17th, his. That's his. Modus, my birthday.
That's his modus operandi. That is, you know, his birthday is today. Happy birthday, Brian Tinian.
Of course, yeah, what a day. He's had a good day to celebrate. Guys, thank you for your contribution. And we'll see most of you on Saturday after the game against Swansea, which I think could be a draw. And that would send out a very good signal. Good night, everybody. Have a good day, evening, whatever's left. All right.
Thanks.
All the best.
Cheers, Dave. Cheers.
Yeah. Good night, everybody. Cheers. Good night.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Press the button.